Hi, this is Elmore Leonard. I'm listening to Film Sociology, and it's a real program. It's great.
It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the multiplex and the art house. What's new on video and streaming, and you might also hear about some dead people we like.
We don't have time for dead people we don't like.
Anyway, this is Film Sociology, where you'll find out what's the next cinematic marvel.
It was unbelievable!
And what's just a movie.
Shut up! My God, you have no freaking life!
Okay, here's your host and my dad, Matthew Soucy.
Hello there, film lovers. Welcome to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. I'm also on Facebook, also on Twitter, at Matthew Soucy. This show is available on iTunes, and like all of the podcasts here at WFYI.org, they are available on Spotify. So, we made it through another week. Hope you're staying safe. Hope you're staying healthy. Hope you're staying sane. Hope you're being good to one another out there. And I hope you got to watch some good movies over the last week. And we'll get to what you watched last week in a little bit. And we also have some dead people we like at the end of the show because we don't have time for dead people we don't like. And I'll go through what I watched. But first, new online and I guess in drive-ins, if there's art house drive-ins, that's the business Abdul and I want to get into. But IFC Films has put out a comedy drama. But it's a film called Made in Italy, and this is teaming up Liam Neeson and his son Michael Richardson. And Michael's done a couple of small things before. Most notably, he's in Cold Pursuit with his dad, and I think he has a bit in Anchorman 2. But in this one, the younger son, Michael Richardson, plays an artist curator who finds out that his ex-wife, whose family owns the gallery he works in, they're going to sell it. So his son is adamant to try to get some money and try to get his life back in order. So he talks his famous but now recluse artist father, played by Neeson, to go to their house in Tuscany, fix it up, and sell it. So a couple interesting parallels. So we get to see father and son work together, and as a dad, that's cool. And young Michael Richardson shows some nice little moments of not just being in the shadow of his father, but standing theatrically with his father, going toe-to-toe with dad, I should say. He also has some nice moments of physical comedy, which was cool. But in this film, and I saw a couple of interviews with father and son. Dad is a widow. Mom has died from a car accident. And as the film goes on, we find out more about the accident. So the fact that this was, of course, Neeson's wife and Richardson's mother, Natasha Richardson, died in an accident. So the fact that they're willing to go there for the sake of a film probably also helps that it's father and son working together. It doesn't feel exploitive. I know this was probably something that both actors were able to dig into a little deep and able to bring into their performances, but it doesn't feel like it's an exploitation move. Now, the story for the most part is kind of by the numbers. Father and son do not get along at the beginning of the film. They have not spoken in a while. Then at times it turns into an art house money pit because there's lots of stuff that needs to be fixed. There's also a very garish mural that dad has painted and he does not want to paint over it, even if it costs him the sale of his house. But we also get a lot of gorgeous footage of Tuscany. And you get a romantic subplot with Michael Richardson's character and a local chef played by Valeria Bilello. Lindsay Duncan comes off the bench nicely as Kate, the realtor in this. So we get the travelogue film, which I always enjoy, and we get father-son mending fences, literally and figuratively, and some secrets that are revealed as to what caused their distance, especially after mom dies, and the way they handled dealing with their emotions. So, and it's not done heavy-handedly. It's just light enough And it's worth checking out. So that is courtesy of IFC Films, called Made in Italy. Now, new on video from Film Movement is a Chinese-French co-production of a crime drama called The Wild Goose Lake. And in this one, a small-time mob leader accidentally kills a police officer, and he's on the run with a bounty on his head. There's also what he's going to do with some money and try to give it to his wife without him getting caught or her getting in trouble. And there's a third-party female that comes in who's got plans of her own. And it's a really kind of cool, glossy film noir set in China. So you have the dark shadows and the rainy streets, but you also have a lot of neon light in this. And we get some good storytelling flashbacks as to what caused this this criminal to go on the run. There's also some good mental questions from the audience on who can trust whom. You got your shootouts, and it's got an it wraps up pretty nicely in a subtle way. So The Wild Goose Lake is also a rental worth checking out, courtesy of Film Movement. Now, last week I mentioned near the end of the show the death of filmmaker Alan Parker, and I think I gave him a short shrift because, by just rattling off the titles, which I'll do again. Bugsy Malone, Midnight Express, Fame, Shoot the Moon, Pink Floyd the Wall, Birdie, Angel Heart, Mississippi Burning, Come See the Paradise, The Commitments, The Road to Wellville, Evita, Angela's Ashes, and The Life of David Gale. And you say what you will, they're all fascinating in their own way, and they all have various degrees of success. I think the weakest of these films that I've listed is probably The Life of David Gale. But also, the fact that he did a subgenre of what Dr. Wes Gehring, my film professor from Ball State, referred to as the anti-musical. Evita is basically Andrew Lloyd Webber on film, but a film like Bugsy Malone and Fame and The Commitments, basically it's music that's being performed on a stage in a classroom, in a rehearsal. You know, in Bugsy Malone, it's a club scene. And I guess it's probably, you could or couldn't say Bugsy Malone is a musical, but anyway, it's just like, but it's a good spoof on the gangster film. And, you know, long-form videos in the you could say with Evita and Pink Floyd the Wall. But I went back and revisited some of the Alan Parker films that I have in my collection, starting off with The Commitments, which is my favorite Alan Parker film. The story of a bunch of Irish musicians in the slums of Dublin forming a soul band. So this is also a widely successful soundtrack, and it's one of those, it's kind of like the Blues Brothers of Ireland, and this was not a real band, this was created by the film, and the Paddy Doyle novel. But it's a fun romp. As somebody who managed a band when he was in college, there was a lot of this I could relate to. Every character is extremely distinctive, and a fun bench, including this was also the film that introduced me to character actor that guy Colm Meaney, which I'm forever grateful for. And Parker's films are always known for their editing. A few of his films were nominated for Best Editing, this being one of them. But as I was watching it over the weekend, it finally conjured into my head how much I enjoyed the second unit work. And this is another example of the city of the neighborhood in Dublin being a character in the film. And I went on Facebook as I was watching this, and I was curious to see what other second unit work that stood out for folks, because this is, I mean, it really captures the neighborhood and the world that these people live in. So I asked and I got some answers. Thomas, for him, when it comes to second unit work, any Coen Brothers film. And Diana chimed in, I came here to say, oh, brother, where art thou? Eric writes On Golden Pond. Diana writes the Lord of the Rings movies for sure. Mike White writes Fred Elms' work on Dune was crucial. Michelle writes Moonrise Kingdom. Jeff writes Dr. Zhivago for sure. David writes The Fall. Patty writes I second The Fall, one of the most visually stunning films I've ever seen. Terry writes The Third Man, La Ventura. Contempt, Don't Look Now, Barry Lyndon, Manhattan, Lost in Translation. So many. I know. Michael writes, second unit on Indy and the Last Crusade for sure. Eric writes, Ben-Hur, 1959, of course, Spartacus, Grand Prix, Jaws, Days of Heaven, Master and Commander, Far Side of the World. And Eric writes, Smokey and the Bandit in Georgia. That is correct, Eric. You are technically, and he chimed in, of course, the only movie to outgrow Smokey and the Bandit the year it came out was Star Wars. So thank you, Eric. But yeah, it was just fun to revisit that film, and I don't get bored watching it. Then I've revisited Fame with another one, like The Commitments, a lot of really solid, well-drawn-out characters. And in this case, we follow them through 4 years. The great audition montage, just similar, it is later kind of recreated in The Commitments. This is one where most famous, where they start to sing and dance out in the street. And that's another, that's about as musical as it gets. With my notes, Love Ann Mira with a Look. But it was fun to watch this as I got older and see the kids who were talented but not focused. And focused but not quite talented enough. And everybody, and the senior from the beginning of the film who turns out to be a waiter in the neighborhood restaurant, and just wrote the Irene Cara scene, which is still hard to watch after all these years. But no, the film still holds up, and the remake's okay. I like the casting, the stunt casting of the teachers in the remake. But no, Fame still holds up. Then I revisited Mississippi Burning, which, of course, is about the killing of civil rights workers in 1964 and the FBI that comes down to investigate it in the small, corrupt Mississippi town. This is also the film that got a lot of flack because it had black actors basically as props. There wasn't a well-drawn-out African-American character, and the white saviors, in this case Gene Hackman and Willem Dafoe, have to come in and help things and take charge of the investigation. Despite the controversy of all that, Gene Hackman is great in this film. The Hackman balance of charm and menace. He's got lovely scenes with Frances McDormand. Both of them received nominations for their performances. If anything else, watching Gene Hackman and his takedowns of Michael Rooker and Brad Dourif, they're also film highlights. Also revisited Angel Heart, which is not a subtle film. I think I went on Facebook and said, what was more subtle, Angel Heart or The Devil's Advocate? And Angel Heart won out. But, of course, in that, Mickey Rourke is a detective in the 1950s who's hired by a mysterious businessman played by a long-haired and bearded Robert De Niro to find an old crooner who owes De Niro's character a debt. I was 17 when this film came out, and a lot of the signs I just missed, and so it blew my skull cap off a little bit when I watched the end of this film, and I'm not going to give away a 30-plus-year-old film. But it's a film with a 50s noir look and a little bit of 80s gloss because it is Alan Parker. And De Niro is having a mighty fun time chewing up some scenery with as much as he does with the hard-boiled egg in this film. Rourke always looks unshaven. You also have this famous sex scene with Lisa Bonet and Rourke, and I'm sure The Cosby Show still loves that. And for me, I forgot Brownie McGee is in this as a musician. With as I find out, his band in the movie included Ricky Moni, Sugar Blue, and Pine Top Perkins. So yeah, not a subtle film, especially after you've seen it once. But I still enjoy checking it out. And finally, Midnight Express. Yes, Billy, have you ever been to a Turkish prison? Or have you ever seen films about Turkish prisons? Well, that's it with Midnight Express. Brad Davis, who this was probably a career highlight for him, as well as Chariots of Fire. But he's an American who's busted for trying to smuggle hashish. And gets 2 years in a Turkish prison. And Davis's character, and Davis the actor, is emotionally and physically put through the ringer on this. He's almost in every frame of the film, and everything from torture and more torture and more torture. So But you also have Bo Hopkins, John Hurt, Randy Quaid coming off the bench. You have the Giorgio Moroder score. And I remember this. The film also had a moment in the celluloid closet because you have a prison shower scene that is not a punchline and it's not violent, but it's two people, in this case two men, in need of affection. And prison films are hard for me to watch, maybe with the exception of Shawshank Redemption, because that's probably an exception to that rule. Yeah, it's at times still a hard watch, but a solid performance from Brad Davis, and I'm glad I got to revisit that film. Salute to Alan Parker. Before we get to your stuff, just a reminder, at indiefilmfest.org, you can check out the festival online, explore the virtual 2020 film lineup and schedule. That's going to be for exclusively for Indie Film Fest fans, October 13th through the 23rd. Join the dream stream, as I believe they're putting it. So yeah, indiefilmfest.org for information there. At the Can-Can Cinema, you have, let's see, Sunday, August 9th, you have the Sunday Coab online meetup with Trey Ellis. That is at 1 o'clock. Monday, August 10th, crowdfunding to build independence workshop. Wednesday, August 12th, a conversation with composers, including Taylor Blake at 4 o'clock. And you have to register. Wednesday, August 12th, Black Film Space and Film Anatomy. That is at 7 o'clock. And then Thursday, August 13th through Sunday, August 23rd, the Indie Film Fest online. And then mark your calendars, Tuesday, August 25th, a Can-Can evening with Tyler Nilsson and Michael Schwartz, the writing and directing team behind the film The Peanut Butter Falcon. So you can go to Can-Can Indie, those are K's, cancanindie.com/upcoming events. Okay. Over at the Tibbs Drive-In, on one stage, we have The Tax Collector, the newest film from David Ayers, as well as The Big Ugly, not the burger and caramel. Screen 2, The Burnt Orange Heresy, and Screen 2, Made in Italy. Screen 3, we have Blackwater Abyss, followed by The Rental. And on Screen 4, we have E.T. and Close Encounters of the Third Kind. That is happening at the Tibbs Drive-In. Over at the Skyline Drive-In in Shelbyville this weekend, they are showing Inside Out and The Empire Strikes Back. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. A couple other titles I got to... the one other title I forgot to mention that I got into with my family is the Cliff Richard musical, The Young Ones. So there's an odd history with the Cliff Richard's films, the films of Cliff Richard and my house. So many years ago, back when Richard Miles was working here at WFYI, we still have a British Telly Club. And for a couple summers, we decided to do a special little film festival for members of the British Telly Club. We would show on a Sunday afternoon a British film of a particular kind. And the very first film we showed, Emma was probably four or five, a long time ago, but was the film Summer Holiday, which I think we're going to watch a little later in the month, and I'll talk about it then. But the second year we did this, the first film we showed was The Young Ones, also known as Wonderful to Be Young, from 1961. Stars Cliff Richard, Robert Morley plays his father, who Carol Gray, and of course The Shadows. And this is a film where we find out the youth center in town is going to be has been purchased and is going to be torn down so the rich businessman can put up office buildings. The problem is the rich businessman's son is played by Cliff Richard, and he loves the youth center. So he's going to do what he can to kind of play both cards, but really save the youth center. Now, interestingly enough about this film is, besides the fact that Herb Ross does the choreography, who would later go on to direct films here in the States, including The Goodbye Girl, Steel Magnolias, The Turning Point, but this film is directed by Sidney Furie, who a Canadian filmmaker who soon after this would go on to make films like The Ipcress Files, The Appaloosa, Lady Sings the Blues, Gable and Lombard, Purple Hearts, Iron Eagle. Yeah, he did Superman 4 and Iron Eagle 2, but don't hold that against him. But interesting jumping off in this case of these filmmakers. And it's an early 60s English Mickey and Judy movie. Let's put on a show. Because there's Herb Ross, there's legit musical numbers. And it's fun. It's not as higher established or higher regards than Summer Holiday in our household. That would come a few years later. The film would be Summer Holiday would come a couple years later. But you could see where Cliff was going. This was trying to do more than just do twisting moves in a discotheque. But anyway, it was a decent little romp, and man, it's a period piece of its time. But I always remember when we showed it at the British Telly Club, about halfway through the film, I was sitting next to a little old English lady, had to be in her 80s, and she leaned over toward me and said, "He's not a very good actor, is he?" And my only response was, "He's trying." So anyway, that's what I watched this week here at Film Sociology and the Soci Household. So we will begin, as we always do, with Eric's email, going through season 6 of Mad Men. Way to go there. For Eric, first time viewing La Plaisir, pardon my French, from 1952. It's a pleasure. It's a pleasure. He deemed it as great. And also The Sin of Nora Moran from 1933, which he dubbed as fair. His rewatched films, 2005 Steven Spielberg's version of War of the Worlds, which he dubbed good, and the 1984 Roland Joffe film The Killing Fields, which he dubbed as excellent. I agree with you there, sir. Let's see. Going over to Twitter, let's see. Brianna writes, rewatch Good Night and Good Luck for possibly the 20th time, and the original House of Wax. Bill writes Mother Jugs and Speed as a companion to my binging of Emergency. There's a good nurse in Emergency, and there's a great driver in Mother Jugs and Speed. There you go. Thanks, Bill. Tracy Forner, who's been on the show. Ford versus Ferrari, 6th time this summer. Judy writes Husbands, the John Cassavetes film. Scott writes Raising Arizona, Bring Down the House, Star Wars Episodes 1 and 2, The Little Hours, and Airplane. A different Bill. Bill writes, There Will Be Blood. Judy writes, adding to Husbands, because I thought she meant the John Cassavetes film. I have watched Cassavetes before, but it's kind of good, and I'm not married while I watch that film. I probably would have just woke up the next morning and punched Sean just because. I know, Judy. I understand. Cicely writes, Host, Relic, Lake of Death, and The Beach House, all horror. Kelly writes, The Old Guard and the Veronica Mars movie as a part of the summer series rewatch. Surely not me, at Fish Called. Not in the last week, but in the last year, most of the films on our lineup this year at Indie Film Fest, available to everyone else starting August 13th. Thank you, Shirley. Chuck writes, Tigers Are Not Afraid, I would recommend. Ed writes, Noted, Chuckster, and just finally saw Hell or High Water, dug it. And in parentheses, also Alien for the 1,257th time. Ed, it's okay. As I've mentioned, hopefully every week, hopefully you're watching new films, or at least new to you, as you did with Hell or High Water, and then films that are cinematic comfort food for you, something that you can fall back on, like Alien for the 1,257th time. That's all right. And I think that is it on Twitter. So moving on. We go back to my Facebook. Alec writes in with Ip Man. Yes. Kate writes Jojo Rabbit. Devin writes Coco, Tangled, Gilbert, and Aladdin, animated and live action. And actually, if you go to the AV Club, they do a feature every other Friday of the top money-making films of the year and their impact. This week's installment is on the animated film version of Aladdin. Jamie writes, Dark Phoenix, Captain America, First Avenger, Iron Man 1 and 2, Thor, Avengers, and Iron Man 3. And about 800 hours of PBS Kids. There were a couple of Sesame Street movies in there, too. Kirsten writes, Back to the Beach. Young Lori. Nick writes, Drunken Master, Total Recall, both the original and the remake. Wheels on Meals, Fearless Hyena, Chinese Zodiac, You Should Have Left, Host, and Run. Mike writes, High Note with Dakota Johnson and Tracy Ellis Ross. Jared writes, Barefoot in the Park and Disney's Hercules. Steven writes, Detour, Cries and Whispers, and tonight, this was yesterday, tonight I'm considering watching Bruce Weber's Chop Suey in honor of Robert Mitchum's birthday. Thank you, Steven. I also watched Cries and Whispers last week because I don't get enough Ingmar Bergman. Gary writes, Airlift. Sarah writes, Train to Busan. Lisa writes, On the Black Hill and Radioactive. Camille writes, The entire Lord of the Rings saga. You could still be watching that right now, Camille. Rachel writes, The Black Castle, Jurassic Park, The Lost World, and PK. Jolene writes, The Two Popes. Jackie writes, The Goonies, Ocean's 11, and The Firm. Jessica writes, You Should Have Left, Stardust, a favorite go-to, and The Old Guard. Roxana writes Frida, the Simon Hayek as Frida Kahlo, and the 1977 original Pete's Dragon. Aggie writes, one of my favorites that reminds me of good times, I Give You the Right Stuff. Very good. Joe Shearer. Joe writes, The Strange Vice of Mrs. Worth, Marvel's The Avengers, Windows, Spotlight, Terror in Beverly Hills, In Search of Darkness, a four-hour joint, should count as two, and The Ascent. Jed writes, just watched Mad Love, 1935, with Peter Lorre, Colin Clive, and Ted Healy. What a great underrated horror film. I also watched Monster Squad. It was my son's first time seeing it, and he loved it. And No Nightmares. Congratulations, Jed, on No Nightmares. And for checking out Mad Love. That's a great Peter Lorre fixture. Matt writes, Shane, The 47 Ronin, The Old Guard, Kagamusha, The Great Dictator, that speech at the end gets me every time, he writes, as well as Samurai Rebellion from 1967. Joshua writes, Hollow Man and The Usual Suspects. Annie writes, Green for Danger, starring Alistair Sims. Sam writes, Wes Craven's The People Under the Stairs. This is Sam Watermeyer. In addition to being guano insane and horrifying, it features some of his most cutting and relevant commentary on race and class. Taylor writes, Ball of Fire, Double Indemnity, Poirot, The Mysterious Affair at Styles, A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Forum, Buckaroo Banzai, Captain Marvel, Sleepy Hollow, Bulletproof Monk, Psych, Lassie Come Home, and Gilda. Monica writes, We watched the original Underworld. It was a movie. I also introduced Brian to Save. Thank you, Monica. Michelle writes, not a film, but I did watch Love on the Spectrum. It was really sweet. Everyone, even those with autism, want to connect with others. It's just harder for some. Dustin writes, Mutiny on the Bounty, 1935. Double Indemnity, Pillow Talk, Seabiscuit, Frost Nixon, Spotlight, The Post, and Lady Bird. Molly writes, Drop Dead Gorgeous, Death the Smoochie, The World's End, Frost Nixon, and Tour de Pharmacie. Brian writes, Deep Blue Sea, 1, 2, and 3, prepping for Shark Week. Dave writes, Fried Green Tomatoes, Winchester 73, Mother, and For Colored Girls. Kim writes, The Great Beauty. Yes, Kim, but what did you watch? Ha, ha, ha. Cassie writes, High Rise, Dead Poets Society, and Avengers Infinity War. David writes, Clue, such a great cast, love the multiple endings. Christina chiming in, I watched it a few weeks ago, much needed laughter. Eric writes, Knives Out, thoroughly enjoyed it. Monica chimes in, we watched that too, it was so good. Adam writes, I watched The Endless. At least I think I did. Kay writes, a wonderful movie called Still Mine. Mary writes, Contact and the Pink Panther Strikes Again. Howell writes, Radioactive. Britt writes, Ghostbusters 1 and 2, Spies in Disguise, Onward, A Fish Called Wanda, Moonstruck, Running Scared, and Green Ice. David writes, Invaders from Mars, 1953 edition, unashamedly, as well you should not be ashamed, David, ever. Ed writes, watched the best two Superman movies back-to-back last night. That would be Superman and Superman 2, I'm guessing. Molly, I tried the rental. Meh. I did watch Witness for the first time in 11 billion years. It was only the mid-80s. Also rewatched Locke, which I thought was criminally overlooked when it came out. Molly, I am with you. Locke made my top five. And, you know, and it wasn't just because you could look at Tom Hardy for 80 minutes driving. But no, really, really tense drama. And it's all in a car. Robin writes, Howl's Moving Castle, twice. Lou Harry, who's been on this show, Summer Stock, Girl Crazy, a couple of terrible festival films I can't mention yet, a couple of good festival films that I can't mention yet, and an exciting RCS as you like it, RSC as you like it. I think I need a good science fiction adventure. Oh, and The Long Dumb Road, which I think that's what is this week. Good stuff. Julie writes, Moby Dick and followed it up with The Old Man and the Sea. Wow. I hope Jeff made salmon for you after that, Julie. Paul writes, I remember liking The Final Countdown when I was a kid, so I watched it again 40 years later. Aside from a likable performance from Kirk Douglas, it was little more than a Navy recruiting video in which the USS Nimitz aircraft carrier goes back in time for some reason. Let's see. I don't want to spoiler. There's a spoiler alert, so I'm not going to read it. The director only worked on made-for-TV movies after that. I see. Sarah. Hey, Sarah. Sarah writes The Neighbor's Window and Parasite. AA Flight finally could watch a movie. Ah, so, okay. Beverly writes, finally saw Parasite. Good for you, Beverly. Tom writes, waiting for Guffman, Christopher Guest's best. The Flight of the Phoenix, Jimmy Stewart as anti-hero, terrific supporting cast, and the film in which veteran movie stunt pilot Paul Mance lost his life shooting the film's climax. Salute to Paul. Gregory writes, Battle of Britain. Adrian writes, The Blues Brothers, and believe it or not, I had never seen it in its entirety before, or I was too wasted to remember. It happens. Glad you got to see it and remember it. Stephanie writes, Walk the Line. Christina writes, the 2006 version of the Pink Panther. Oddly, I'd never seen it, and it's perfectly hilarious given this week's intensity. Jay writes, rewatched a couple oldies but goodies. We also watched Susie Q, the Susie Quattro documentary. I knew she was a great bass player and crazy good live performer, but dang, why is she not in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame? There you go. She also did Broadway and London theater, a few movies, and, of course, Happy Days. Vote Susie in, Jay says. Terry writes, The Big Knife, A Married Woman, Goodbye to Language, Fiend Without a Face, All or Nothing, and Irma Vep. Mulveen writes, Harriet, even though you know the outcome, it's still intense. Darren writes, On the Town and A Mighty Wind. Joanne writes, Come and See, Russian film directed by Ilham Klimov. Devastating but brilliant. Daniel writes, Foul Play, The Kid from Brooklyn, Wonder Man, L.A. Confidential, Airport, Wife versus Secretary, The New Commandments, Being Julia, Dark Passage, Oliver, My Favorite Blonde, and Satan's School for Girls. Good one, Daniel. Jeff writes, Wreck-It Ralph, Ralph Breaks the Internet, and On the Avenue. James writes, The 8-year-old grandson and I watched Galaxy Quest. He gave it 2 thumbs up, and now you have to give Siskel and Ebert's family money for copyright. Jessica writes, Doctor Strange and Hit the Deck. Oh, and Pollyanna. Kathleen writes, Great Gatsby, the Robert Redford version, and American Gigolo. David writes, 1917. Janet writes, Rain Man, Margin Call, Motherless Brooklyn, Julie and Julia, The Last Movie Star, Serpico, and The Lords of Flatbush. Kelly writes, the Thomas Crown Affair, the remake, one of the very few I prefer to the original, even though the original had Steve McQueen and Faye Dunaway. I understand. That dress Renee has is something. Carbon Copy, out of morbid curiosity because the poster was so horrible, but it turned out to be not half bad. Denzel Washington's first movie. She also added Hot Fuzz, Shaun of the Dead, and Elmer Gantry. She says about Hot Fuzz, because Rebecca writes, Hot Fuzz is one of my faves. Kelly chimed in, I'd forgotten how funny it was. Went on to Shaun of the Dead that night for a double feature. Good double feature there. Ryan writes, The Circle. Linda writes, Unknown. And finally, Phil chimes in, watch the first two Swedish film adaptations of Stieg Larsson's trilogy. Still reading the third book, so film number three will have to wait a few days. Thank you, Phil. And there you go, folks. That's what you've been watching recently. So once again, I hope you find new films, or new to you at least, as well as checking out old favorites, because we need cinematic comfort food in these times. Friends, some words to live by.
Silent breed is people!
Zardoz has spoken.
Go see a good movie. You deserve it. There's plenty out there. I want to end this week's show with a salute to a couple of dead people we like, because we never have time for dead people we don't like. But actor Rini Santoni passed away. And I've going back through his resume, I had forgotten this is a guy that can do comedy and drama and is known for both, I think, equally. Credits go all the way back to 1962. I remembered his uncredited role. He was listed as junkie selling radio in Sidney Lumet's film The Pawnbroker. Got a big break in 1967 in Carl Reiner's film Enter Laughing. Also starred in Anzio, Guns and the Magnificent Seven, The Student Nurses, and then probably his best known cinematically as the first partner for Dirty Harry. In the first Dirty Harry. Did a lot of TV. Also did I Never Promised You a Rose Garden. Loved him. And I watched this earlier this year with my wife, where he played Carlos Rodriguez in Dead Men Don't Wear Plaid. And he's able to do comedy just as well. And he will take care of your pajamas. Also played in Bad Boys, the Sean Penn version. Yes, he was in the TV series Manimal, Brewster's Millions, Cobra, so he got to do a kind of Stallone version of a Dirty Harry film and got to be his Stallone's partner in that. Was the narrator for the film version of Cat Chaser, Only You, Private Parts, Can't Hardly Wait, was one of the voices in Dr. Dolittle, 28 Days, and for you TV fans out there, played Poppy in the TV series of Seinfeld. But I also want to end with a little audio tribute to Wilford Brimley, who, going back through his resume, and this is gonna happen again with Ned Beatty, is there's more to this guy than diabetes. There's more to this guy than the GIF of riff of diabetes. His credits go all the way back to 1969, uncredited in True Grit, Lawman. First thing, and he did an episode of The Waltons, the TV series of How the West Was Won. And it was one of those that I'd forgotten he was in The China Syndrome, The Electric Horseman, and Brubaker, as well as Borderline. But he had a really good run of films in the 80s. And the first thing I really notice him in, and we're going to end with audio from this, is his first couple minutes in the film Absence of Malice, where he's with the Department of Justice, and he owns the room. And this is a room that has Paul Newman, Sally Field, and Bob Balaban all involved, and he absolutely takes charge. But he did that, The Thing, High Road to China, loved him in Tender Mercies. He was the captain in 10 to Midnight, Tough Enough, Harry and Son, Hotel New Hampshire, The Stone Boy, played, of course, manager Pop Fisher in The Natural, was Otis in Country, and of course, Cocoon. And he was 49 when he started filming Cocoon. Yeah, he's considerably younger than his other co-stars, but Wilford Brimley was one of those guys that looked like he was born 50. Remo Williams, End of the Line with Levon Helm. Of course, Cocoon the Return, which nobody asked for. And also played a mean mother in the film version of The Firm. And also Uncle Duvet, the man who had a better Cajun accent than Jean-Claude Van Damme in John Woo's film of Hard Target. And then also a couple other films of note, My Fellow Americans and In and Out, as well as Did You Hear About the Morgans. So salute to Wilford Brimley. But no, really, you should check out his 80s work. There's just more to this man than diabetes, like the scene you're about to hear. So go see a good movie. You deserve it. Stay healthy. Stay sane. Stay safe. And be good to one another. And we'll talk again, or I'll read off your movie list next week. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. Good afternoon, Fort Myers. Good afternoon, California. Good afternoon, Michigan.
Have a seat, folks. Well, now, let the record show that I'm James J. Wells, Assistant Attorney General for the Organized Crime Division of the United States Department of Justice. With me here are... Oh, hell, Angie, you know who these folks are. Just write them in. I've had no conversation with anyone here prior to the beginning of this record. At this time, I'd like to inform all present they have the right to remain silent and the right to retain counsel. I inform them further that anything they say during the course of this... This inquiry may be taken down and used against him. Anybody here want a lawyer?
No.
No.
Ms. Carter, you brought your own. Mr. Gallagher, do you want a lawyer, sir?
No.
Good. Ain't no more room in here anyway. Anybody want to read the paper? You got a story in here. It says Strike Force investigating a DA suspecting bribes. It's the damnedest story you ever read. Nobody in this department ever read a story quite like that. Tell you what we're going to do. We're going to sit right here and talk about it. Now, if you get tired of talking here, Mr. Marshal Elving Patrick there will hand you one of them subpoenas he's got stuck down in his pocket, and we'll go downstairs and talk in front of the grand jury. Now, we'll talk all day if you want it. But come sundown, there's going to be two things true that ain't true now. One is that the United States Department of Justice is going to know what in the good Christ, excuse me, Angie, is going on around here. And the other is I'm going to have somebody's ass in my briefcase.
I can't believe you let her watch Manos. Is she scarred for life?
Let's put it this way.
What parent are you?
When I wake her up, I vocalize the theme to wake her up to get her ready to school.
Oh, you're a terrible father.
We'll do it live.
Okay.
No. We'll do it live!